You are now listening to Out of the Blank.
Welcome to another episode of Out of the Blank Podcast. Here's Scott.
Thanks for having me, Rob. Appreciate it.
Scott, happy to have you, man. Now, it's life is a little bit too serious, so why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself, Scott?
What about myself? I'm just kind of a normal guy. Do different things. Got a regular day job. Work in IT. I'm a track and field coach, so I actually coach specifically the javelin throw. And that's kind of a big aspect of my life. And then recently a wannabe podcaster. So
wait, how do you go from javelin throw to podcast? Like that's insane. Can you think, like, I always like looking at things and then trying to find a better description of what it would be. Like you say javelin throws, like it's a sport. You grab a kind of like a spear and you throw it kind of like the Spartans do. Or you'd be like, a person grabs a giant metal rod and chucks it through the air at a certain miles per hour that goes a certain distance. And at any moment, the crowd is fearing for their life. And I'm like, that's a way better way of explaining it, where any kid is like, I want that to be a movie.
Well, it's funny because the movies that you see people throwing spears, you know, you being a javelin coach, I go, that's not the way you throw it.
Really? Honestly, you're judging, yeah, like, oh, yeah. You're judging, yeah, the movie 300. That's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No, it's, you know, throwing spears is fun. I started doing it in high school, and mainly because I missed out on baseball. I was kind of a baseball player growing up and missed baseball tryouts and saw like folks out on the track throwing the javelin. And I was like, yeah, I think I can do that. So I went out there. And the other thing is I was a sprinter jumper at the time, and I never saw those javelin throwers run. So I was like, oh, here's a lazy way for me to do something. And so I went over there, and my coach just didn't let me do it for a while. In fact, he's kind of like, well, you know, we've kind of got enough javelin throwers already. And I was like 145 pounds or something, you know, little guy. And I was like, no, I really want to do it. So I kept bugging him. And after a couple of weeks, he let me go out there and throw. And this was my junior year in high school, you know, good old days, right? And I went out and threw, ended up like growing in distance, you know, every track meet. And at the end of the season, I actually took second place at state, and I threw 190, I want to say 194 at state to get second place. So turned out to be a pretty good athletic path to follow.
Do you ever get like, cause for me, like just watching those, like I always hear those people that critique like a certain sport, even though they've never played it their entire life. Like even with like shuffleball, it goes to a point where people are like, I could do that luge stuff so easy. And I'm like, really? Like, cause that javelin stuff actually is pretty difficult, trying to chuck a spear through the air. First of all, just the amount of force that you have to have behind it. Also the angle as well too. I mean, it's like kind of like throwing a baseball. I remember like, on the same aspect, not maybe the same technique as throwing a baseball, but I remember stepping up to the plate thinking I could throw 90 miles an hour easy. And then I threw it and it just hit the ground immediately, like just bounced off the ground and went up. And I was like, wow, actually trying to aim for a certain target and actually be able to throw it right through the line drive, right down the middle, straight into there. It's actually really difficult if you think about it.
Yeah, it's interesting because most people who look at a sport and they go, oh yeah, I could do that. It's because the people that they're watching are really good at it. You know, I mean, you think about professional baseball. I mean, any real sport that has any like technical thing to it, those people make it look easy. Javelin throwing is just that. It's the same way. It, you know, the spear is like, for the men's jav, it's like 8.5 feet long, and it weighs roughly 5 times the weight of a baseball. And so it's this kind of awkward, I mean, throwing spears, it's just a very awkward thing to do. And javelin throwers, if they're any good, they just make it look like it's easy, like it's no big deal. So
do they have to get like a mental check though with it? Because I feel like for me, like I've had enough people piss me off before. I'm like, I could turn this on the crowd in a moment. And that's not something like catching a t-shirt in the crowd. You're catching a spear to the face is a different scenario.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I've seen someone catch a spear to the face.
What? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. I was, I want to say this was in like 2000, maybe 2001, 2002, something like that. I was at a national championship in college, and there were just like way too many officials out in the field, and we were in warmups, and, you know, they were far enough away, but we had moved into this sort of second round, and the javelin throwers were better in that second round, and they started warming up. Javelins were going farther and farther, and these guys, I think it was like maybe four of them standing around talking while we're in warmups, and one of the guys just let one loose, and it went directly to that crowd, and they all scattered except one guy caught it like right through his nose, like sideways through his nose,
like a bone through the nose, but you got a javelin straight in there.
Yeah, it's huge too. Yeah.
Oh my god, is he all right?
I think he lives to tell the story. I mean, I've seen other injuries like this before. I mean, it's a spear. It was used in warfare to kill things, right? I mean, you gotta give it a little bit of respect. And it was probably worse for the guy who actually threw it. But for the rest of us who saw it happen, it was like really quiet before. We were kind of joking around and having a good time, getting ready for competition. And after that, it was just like eerie quiet all the time. Like you could tell people were really bothered by it. So,
oh my God. Like, yeah,
I know, it still happens.
I started thinking like immediately when he said that, like statistics of that player, like how many people have you killed? And he's just got a tally by his thing. You look at him like, I don't know if I want him draft. It's crazy because like I remember going to baseball games all the time. It was like we had a local baseball team down here. They were like kind of minor league, I would say. They're called the Shorebirds. And you would like, I would pay for a ticket. You know, they have a thing, you bring in a canned food item. It's like a dollar ticket. So I was like, an easy way to kill a Sunday or a Saturday or something. I remember that there was, because everyone wants to sit behind the net. Somehow, I don't know, it was like just where the net ended, because it only goes up to a certain point. Just dude hit the ball in a certain way. And I mean, straight at this woman's face. And she was an elderly lady. And you just see it hit her head and her head conk back. And I was like, she's dead. She's dead. But ambulance had to come and pull her out and everything. And I was like, just, that's why everyone's like, I want to get front row. I'm good. I will sit in the bleachers. I don't care. I'm like, at that point, that scared me so much to where I was like, that was at least 87 miles an hour to your face. And especially an elderly woman who's probably 87 herself. I was like, oh, no, 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 no.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the best looking being guy, the person that did God. It.
Well, yeah, I mean, imagine being the person who actually did that to them. I mean, of course, it's not on purpose, but holy cow, what a... How do you get over that? Especially if someone, you know, were to die from it. It's bad enough if they get injured and disformed or whatever. I mean, being the person who actually delivered that, that's that'll take a little while to get over.
So when did the shift turn into podcasting?
You know, to be honest, it's like this COVID stuff. I originally, I kind of grew up very quiet and that sort of thing. And to kind of get out of my shell, I started having to do these different tech trainings for my job. And it got to a point where I just got more and more comfortable with working with folks. And then I started coaching more seriously and, you know, doing track clinics and traveling and speaking in front of folks. And it just kind of got easier and easier. And then podcasting, a buddy of mine, Dave, he and I see each other maybe once a month, maybe even less than that. And we just started, like every time we got together, we were just chatting for hours about all these different topics. And so I'm like, you know, we should just start a podcast. Who cares if anyone listens? It'd just be fun to record, you know, our conversations. And so we decided, you know what, COVID's here. We're doing, there's a different pace to life and I'm working from home more often. And I thought, you know what, let's do it. So we did. And it's been a blast. Absolutely love podcasting. It's just, you know, it's kind of a relaxed thing. You get to chit chat with folks. And for me, I kind of take it as a learning opportunity. You know, he kind of throws an idea out at me or a topic and I go, well, I don't know much about that. So I start studying and learn a little bit more. And I've really enjoyed it. I mean, watching or, you know, listening to most of the different episodes, because I do all the editing, you know, I go back in and it's like an opportunity for me to grow a little bit more and not only just learning how to do a little bit better in the editing room, but learn a little bit more about the topics that I'm talking about and the way that I'm speaking and try and make adjustments as I go. So
plus,
I'm sure you're
fun
familiar with
doing
it too,
man. I mean, the whole concept, like, how many podcasts do you come across that are like some serious ass topics? Like, I have people that study the war and study all these things. I have a buddy who does a podcast that is straight up all about history, and he literally has to take like days where he doesn't talk to anybody because he gets so depressing when he's learning about the depression, the amount of things people go through. I'm like, why would you do that as a hobby? I get it. You're getting smarter, what, by studying historical things? So I was like, you want to have fun with it. I got Papa John, the man himself, he banned me all my social media on the aspect of I called him a cult leader, and my buddy who's an artist created a shirt with him holding a pizza and a head. And I was like, yes. So I started making it and promoting it and tagging him and all of it. And eventually he blocked me. I'm like, that's the fun I love. Like, even though he's not probably a bad guy, he looks like it, but still the idea that you can have, like, for me, it was like meeting somebody new and then being able to strike up a conversation, really never knowing where it goes. And it's like, you get to start to really realize how stressful the world is already. Like, everything social. I mean, even just the other day, trending on Twitter was Helen Keller. And I'm like, oh, Helen Keller, is it her birthday or something? She's dead, so it's obviously not the news that she died. Clicked on it. Helen Keller is either racist or Helen Keller didn't exist. And I'm like, why? Why are we doing this? What games are we playing? Like, Twitter trending has just been my topic of choice that I go to when I want to start up a podcast. I'm like, fuck it. What's trending on Twitter? Aliens. Hillary Clinton's a puppy. Okay, well, let's figure out what this is and let's get deep down into that one.
That's hilarious. Well, it's true though. There's so much stuff to talk about. I was listening to some of your recent podcasts, and it's so funny how, you know, just in conversation, you get to learn so much more. You know, just having someone new to talk to, there's so much to talk about. It's not, you know, sometimes you kind of see the news headlines and it's kind of repetitive. It's the same old thing, but you look into like social media, you look at different hashtags, you just have a conversation with another person. There's tons of stuff to talk about out there. It's absolutely, I mean, the world is changing constantly, you know?
Well, that
and
idea
you're in a position you get to...
That idea of conversation gets lost, though, because if you look at the fact of like conversation for a lot of people, like for me, reaching out to you, to any other podcaster, like it's, or any other person, it's a question of like, what does this person want from me? And it's like, legit... The way to growth is through information, but the information is better when it's seen through another perspective. Not saying that their perspective is the right way, but seeing that that perspective can enhance your own. And I'm like, who doesn't want to shoot the shit for an hour? Like, I have an app idea where you just get a random Zoom call with a random person for 1 hour a day. It's required, mandatory. You would learn so much more and have an empathy more for people if you could just shoot the shit with somebody. I mean, everything nowadays is like Trump, Biden politics type crap. And I'm like, that's why I dive down the conspiracy rabbit holes, is because they're fun. They're like, when someone tells me flat earth is or birds don't exist, I'm like, explain your thinking. And then they start explaining it, and then you gotta be careful though, because eventually you'll be like, oh, maybe they are right. And it's like, oh wait, now I gotta step back before I start going down that rabbit hole.
Well, yeah, you get to talk to so many more people. I don't even know how you do so many different podcasts. It's so frequent, it's crazy. I do a once a week, and I might have enough time to do like two podcasts when Dave and I meet. But you get an opportunity to talk to so many people, and you produce so many shows. It's, to me, it's mind blowing because you get exposed to so many different types of personalities, different topics. I mean, how do you navigate through all those things?
It's kind of like you have a million like different voices and like kind of thoughts that you get to hear from. And it gets insane because like, the perspectives, I never have a final answer on anything anymore. Like if you were to ask me like a couple of years ago, like, hey, what's this? And I'm like, if the answer is that, the answer is this, the answer is that. And if you would have said science, PhD, it would have been, it's classified in, I think, most people's heads that means top notch, 100%, they know the answer. And you realize, no, we're all just trying to figure it out. And then this like overwhelming like blanket comes over you of like, holy shit, I'm not like, oh, I don't have PhDs, but that doesn't matter because you can still get intelligence from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always, you know, for me, as I started, you know, thinking about doing this podcast stuff, I just thought, you know, oh, what are my friends going to think? What are the, you know, what are my coworkers going to think when they stumble across it? You know, because my opinion on the podcast may seem a little bit different than my opinion at work, you know, because I have to be a slightly different person at work. You know, I can't say certain things at work. I can't say certain things to certain friends because I know that that's going to be a touchy subject for them. So my fear kind of going into it was, what if, you know, what are people going to think of me? You know, unfortunately, I've been a people pleaser most of my life. And as I've gotten older, I'm much, much less of a people pleaser. But for you, I mean, are you just kind of, as you go through your podcast, it's just you. There's no difference between you and any other you at any other place.
Yeah, it's just, I think the main factor, like you said, the whole passion, the whole fun about it and stuff like that, that's what's the important part to it. I mean, like, I'm not trying to like talk to like, you know, give advice or anything. It's just the aspect of like, you gotta have fun doing it. Like I'm generally interested in the conversation. I generally want to be here, and you start to learn stuff about people, have fun with people. But it's like, that's what I said I like about your page and stuff, is the idea of not being too serious. Like life is so freaking serious. Like if you really think about it, you can give yourself a panic attack. And it's like, the world has so much funner things to look at. Like when people see like that conspiracy stuff is garbage, it's crazy. I'm like, look at that in a different perspective. Look at that. At like, it's fun to, and I have flat earthers that message me 24/7 on an idea of trying to get them on the podcast just for a concept of, I had one flat earther on, started talking a lot of trash on it. The next thing you know, I got a billion people like, let me get you this guy who wrote a book on this. I have Scientologists that constantly message me. I'm like, they're like Jehovah's Witnesses that don't go away. And I love it because it makes my life entertaining. One day I wake up and it's a pen page called Hydraulic Pen messaging me, telling me that they're the leader of the flat earthers and sending me all these links to certain websites that are disguised as a pen page, but they're all about flat earth. And I'm like, yo, if you really start looking into it, you can kind of convince yourself that the earth could be flat. And I'm like, oh, that's where you got to pull back. Got to reel that sucker back.
That's hilarious. So Dave and I just recorded on Saturday, just, you know, a conversation about flat earthers and the conspiracies, and then a little bit about, you know, the idea of free speech, because there's, you know, a lot of flat earthers are getting censored. I mean, on YouTube, you watch and there's always some sort of notification underneath saying, hey, you know, don't believe this. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but basically there's a lot of censoring going on. And it's like, topics like flat earth, I think are fantastic because it really makes you think, especially if you think that you're on one side of the argument and then you hear the other side of the argument, and it starts to make you think. And thinking is a positive thing. You know, everyone should be doing a little bit more of it. But I think as far as like the never too serious side of it, life shouldn't be taken so serious. You know, there are so many things, you get into a rut and all of a sudden you're depressed. You know, the things that you do during the day just aren't as fulfilling. You know, Dave and I were talking about getting older, and because I'm 42 now.
You look and great.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And so, you know, I got wife and kids, and, you know, I've been in a career for a long time. And, you know, as you start getting through certain stage of your life, you start thinking about, you know, what direction are you going? You know, what's valuable anymore? And part of it is just finding fun and entertainment and stuff. And I think podcasting and talking to other people is just a great outlet. It's a great creative outlet to find other perspectives and other things that you, being stuck in your own little bubble, would never get to experience. You know,
you can be surprised how many recordings recently I've done where people talk about the idea of like cancel culture, the idea of like where they should be at. And I'm like, it's on all of our minds. Like when I do a conversation with someone, I can guarantee you from all the people I've talked to, depending on what time it was or what, you know, what month or whatever was going on in the culture, we're all thinking on the same thing. Like we all think conversations needed, you know, families, dinners aren't really happening anymore, depending on where you live or what your household's like. Usually it's just like sitting in your room eating and watching Netflix. And it's like this whole connection and sense of empathy is gone, but like cancel culture nowadays, people are upset about it. I'm like, yeah, censorship's an issue. Like I've talked about it a lot, and I started realizing deeper and deeper I went into it that like Google, the reason why Australian government's banning it and all these other places is they have paid partnerships. So if you type in like, there was a guy, a doctor who took the vaccine, and he died after getting it. Now that's going to happen with anything. That's going to happen with, it could be vaccine for the common cold. You know, you'll get that one person that's that anomaly that might get sick or something from it. And Google doesn't show those results for it. And you start looking at it as they censored it. And you look on this site called DuckDuckGo, which is a free-based search engine, much like Google used to be before they constructed paid partnerships. And that's the top result. And it'll show you the guy's information. It'll show you the guy's research. It'll show you everything. And you're like, why isn't this on Google? And it's because Google has paid partnerships with certain things that run in the administration, especially somehow is linked to our politics too, where it's not giving you the right stuff. And I'm like, the more technology progresses, we're getting into an era of schizophrenia where people don't know what to believe. They don't know if this is real, because then you get down the QAnon rabbit hole. And I'm like, oh man, like this is when you start getting that like that exhale, that everything's getting real serious and all that. And I'm like, that's when I love like fucking pop in a movie, Speed, Keanu Reeves. I don't give a shit. Just take a minute to take a step back, so you're not starting a Twitter war with someone who doesn't deserve it. You know what I mean? Like everything nowadays, you come on Twitter, it's really hard to find something positive, but it's not like it's not there. You just got to give people a chance to be able to find something that doesn't piss them off, which is like a 0.1% chance out of 100. So
Did you see the that Netflix what is it called? It's about social media, a social dilemma. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of freaky because it, you know, there's stuff in there where the algorithms really, it's kind of designed to capture your attention. And so, you know, folks like Google, they kind of track what you're doing, you know, what your search results or search criteria are. And they give you search results that sort of keep you into that same area of your interest. In fact, your biases, right? And you kind of get into this bubble where you don't get to experience the stuff from the outside. And it's the same thing, Twitter, you know, they give you recommendations on what stuff to follow or what stuff to watch. And again, you go back to the conversations. You just have to have conversations with different people. You can't stay in your bubble the entire time. And that's why I like your show so much, because you have so much variety. It's absolutely crazy the different topics that are on your show and the different people you get to experience those conversations with. You know, yeah, I think that helps people grow
a little bit. My algorithm guy, I would say, is a little bit confused. I don't know who who's the person that does the Wish, that shopping site, that algorithm, because I swear to God, every time I'm on there, I'm getting like ads for like, they had a Obi-Wan Kenobi robe, which I'm like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. I've done Star Wars podcast guest appearances where I'm Robbie One Kenobi. It makes sense. You heard that. But then I'm getting something where there's like, here's a fleshlight, here's some whips and chains. And I'm like, I have never in my life talked about anything that dealt with, I've talked to a brothel keeper, sure, but I have never talked about whips and chains and gags and spoons. And then they give me one for like a spork that's made of metal, but at the end of like the handle of the spork, it's got like the Death Star or something. I'm like, in what universe, who's calculating the algorithm? Like, I throw off my Netflix, whoever does the algorithms for Netflix, I throw that guy off. What I do is I watch a serial killer documentary, and then I watch a kid show, and then I watch a murder, and then I watch like a documentary about food or something. So the guy's like, I don't know what to peg him as. Is he a crazy person, or is he just a lonely guy? I'm like, I don't know. Pick your choice.
Yeah, that's when I tell my kids, get off my computer, get off my Netflix profile, because it can't be following what I want, right? Yeah. I see all these weird things popping up there. It's like, come on, there's something wrong there. But, you know, the algorithm is always trying to learn from you, trying to figure out what is it that you're interested in, and then recommend those things. And I think for a human, it becomes a real problem, because we don't then explore outside of it. We kind of get into a rut. I think it's pretty dangerous. You know, the podcast for us, it started off with just sort of us kind of, you know, shooting the breeze, and then it sort of turned into, well, let's find some weird topics to talk about that we would never normally talk about, you know,
like the amount of people that get arrested ordering world famous chicken at a gas station. It's happened to me once. It's happened to me one time.
Are you the only story?
This dude, if you look up anything in Florida, I'm not surprised, because I swear I just saw a post about a dude that he got charged with assault with a deadly weapon, and they read the description. He threw an alligator through a window at a drive-thru because his order was messed up. And I'm like, what? Like, I've never in my life been upset at Chick-fil-A for missing out on giving me a Chick-fil-A sauce packet or Polynesian sauce and thrown an alligator through the drive-thru window. That's just never happened.
Yeah. Well, I have to get your hands on. Well, I'm from the Northwest. We don't have alligators. That would be a pretty tall order for us. But I see weird stuff happen all the time, going in, people getting all mad about, you know, messing up on their order. And those news stories crack me up, because to me, it's like there are stories out there and we should probably know about them.
There was a story about a guy that tried to kill his neighbor by slathering peanut butter on his hands and then going over to his house to fight him, and because his neighbor had a peanut allergy. And I'm like, is that dude a psychopath? Because that's really, really smart thinking. Like, this rubbing Jif on your hands and just one punch, the guy's on the floor needing an EpiPen. And I'm like, that might be a next Charles Manson or something, you know? Charles Manson.
Yeah. Well, but then again, you get caught and there's definitely intent there. No accident.
It depends if it's crunchy or creamy. There's the crime.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Well, yeah, I mean, just, you know, there's all kinds of, you know, unique ways to kill someone, right? I mean, I have never explored these things, but you know, an allergy, there's trouble there.
From what I've heard, the best way to hurt some or kill somebody is with an ice pick. Apparently that's the most effective weapon. But I'm like, you hear, like, there's only one recorded serial killer that was a female. And I was like, is that just because, like, I've seen, like, Pulp Fiction, or not Pulp Fiction, what is it, Sixth Sense, where they poison the kid? And I'm like, is that why? Because they just poison you, right? They don't really go out and shoot you in the head. They just slowly kill you by putting, like, there was a woman that poisoned a piece of Tylenol and was giving it to her husband. But, like, she had to wait, like, 8 years. Like, it was a Tylenol she coated in something. And then had to literally wait 8 years for the day he was like, I have a headache. Do we have any Tylenol? And she killed him that way. Like, it was an 8-year plan. And I was like, you guys are in it for the long haul. Holy shit.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, I think life is short, and there's got to be a better way to find happiness than to wait 8 years trying to kill your spouse.
That's my whole thing with, like, getting married. I was like, I never want to get married, because for everything I've seen, it's just splitting half your shit. And I'm like, if you love someone, it shouldn't be a contract of it. Like, there's all these accounts of, like, women that end up leaving a guy and then they end up going to court and they have to keep paying all these settlements and stuff. Like, there's a dude that's paying 14 years out, whatever it is, like, that owes her like $100,000+ that he has to pay every, like, year or something. And
yeah, some sort of alimony.
He was only married 10 years and he's been paying for 14. So they've been separated longer than they were together. And it's like Joe Rogan says, did he bang her so hard she couldn't work? And it's like an aspect of, like, I don't want that to happen to me, because I'm like, why would you have to confine it with the state, with how everyone hates, you know, how the government's running and stuff? Why does it need to be on a piece of paper? Isn't your love enough? When you bring kids into the world, that's a bigger commitment.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally agree. I mean, I'm a married guy. I love my wife, but she'll be my very last wife. No matter whatever happens, I will never get married again. It's just, it's one of those things that life is really short and you better find the right person that you want to spend your time with. And if you don't, boy, make a decision. And before you have kids, holy cow. I mean, you're right. As soon as you have kids, game changes. Those kids have to become, like, your number one priority. And yeah, life is too short to be doing things that just aren't going to make you happy. And, you know, I think searching for the things that matter most in life, and even sometimes if it's just the journey of that search, that might be good enough. But man, don't waste your time with someone that you don't want to be with. you know.
Well, the biggest fear is what, like, you're gonna upset the kids. I think when my parents separated, that was like the biggest fear, is like how the kids are gonna handle. I'm like, why would we want you miserable? That's the thing. It's like you wanna be happy. It's like, that's the whole point of life, is trying to find happiness no matter what it is. And I was like, that's the one benefit of this whole pandemic that I think a lot of people pulled out, was it gave them time to self-reflect on things, you know, find out what they wanted to do. If they wanted to build fucking IKEA furniture, they started building IKEA furniture. And I'm like, there you go. Like, there's what, 65,752 days in an average lifespan of 71 years. So I was like, why would you waste a moment of that being unhappy? Like, and I know the world, how it works. You got to pay bills. You got to do the things you got to do to be able to provide for your family and stuff. But it's like, doesn't mean that you have to completely be miserable. It just means that you have to do something, and then you have plenty of other time for the rest of the day to do whatever you feel like you need to be doing to make sure that you stay happy. Because sadly, I mean, you know it from being like, even if you're a coach or something, you know it from the kids there. Sports are important on the aspect of it helps release endorphins, hormones, all these things that, you know, get out your anger. For instance, you want to toss a javelin at somebody's nose, go ahead and do it. Just don't say that I told you to. But it's an aspect of, like, the world right now is like, it's definitely hurting. It's definitely kind of tensed up. A lot of things are making you tense, especially it's not helping with social media, but an aspect of, like, there's fun stuff. When Bernie was sitting in that chair with his arms crossed, I knew the internet was coming back, because everybody was memeing him. Like, they had the we landed on Mars, and they had the first video of Mars, the 26 seconds or whatever from the camera drone. And as it got to the last 5 seconds, it was just Bernie sitting on Mars. And I'm like, yes, remember how the pandemic started? We started with a GIF. You know what that, or you know what that meme was that we started with? The giant black guy that was sitting on the edge of the bed naked, and you would get a text message that would say coronavirus cases in your area, and you'd click it, and that thing would pop up, and you'd be scarred for life. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
That guy was a famous French. He was doing that photo to raise money for his family because he was dying of a terminal illness, and he is no longer with us. And I found that out, and I was like, damn it, I'm going to whatever. And they raised enough money to afford a funeral for that man, and also help his family with some bills. So I was like, that's why he did the photos, and everyone just memed his face to coronavirus. And I was like, you guys don't even know the story.
That's hilarious. Yeah. I am scarred from that photo. It's neat to hear a little bit about the backstory on it. Well, it's go ahead.
I was gonna say, the worst part was when I had someone in my family be like, hey, I just saw this. I'm like, mom, stop, I know what that is. Don't even show me that link. I'm not even gonna click on it. I know what it is. Did you click it? I'm like, I'm not clicking on it, because I know what's gonna pop up, and it's gonna scar me again.
Yeah, you can't unsee it, that's for sure. I know I have got a brother and a college friend that we're really, really close, and send, you know, group text back and forth. We've gone on some vacations together, and those guys, those bastards, they keep sending me that kind of stuff. And it's like, I don't need to see it. I really don't. I know you're getting a good laugh out of it. I don't need to see it.
It's crazy, because like, it all really depends on, I guess, what your outlook or your perspective is that you're looking at something. Like, people are looking at this Ted Cruz thing, like this giant, oh my God, look, he's a hypocrite. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, he's a politician. There are, a lot of them aren't really the best of people. But I looked at it like, can you imagine that, though? Like, there's another guy he called out for flying to Cancun, and then he does the same shit. And not only was it Cancun, but like, he put out a group text to, I think, all their neighbors or everything, to that if they wanted to join him and go to Cancun with them. And I was like, one of those wives put it up to CNN and sold that information out. And I was like, fucking, you gotta laugh at that. I mean, come on. And his dog's name's Snowflake. Like, oh, like, when I saw that trending on Twitter, I was laughing my ass off. I was like, so many people are so upset and riled up, like, cursing him out and tweeting at him 1,000 times. I'm just laughing my ass off. Like, you understand how much of a serious you're taking this topic? You got to realize, like, you got to do what you feel like you need to be doing. You got to do what you got to do to be right. There's too little time.
I totally agree. Yeah, exactly. I think people are way too sensitive to what everyone else is doing. You know, my philosophy really is just take care of yourself. Don't worry so much about other people. But we live in a world where everyone's, you know, dogging on everyone else for doing something else. And it's like, you know, you could do something, you know, 20 years ago, well, or now, and then pay for the consequences in 20 years because people are still acting that way. It's like, come on, just I don't really care what the politicians are doing other than what they are elected to do. You know, I want them to do their job when they're, you know, they're on the job, but everything else, I just don't care too much. You know, people get too pissed off about stupid little things, and why not see someone and laugh about it? It's, you know, it's like the comedy culture now. It seems like so many people are having to, you know, kind of censor themselves, and there are very few people still out there who are willing to, you know, kind of push the envelope of what's okay to joke about. You know, I'm a big fan of Joe Rogan and his comedy and, you know, his podcast. People like that can get away with it to a certain extent, you know, because that's who they are. And everyone knows that that's who they are. But man, some of these other people, boy, they get ripped pretty hard for coming out and saying something that's just trying to be funny. Or, you know, who knows, if it's skipping out on a snowstorm to go to Mexico, I'd be guilty of doing that myself if I had the means to do it, you know?
I think it hits this point, like Joe Rogan's been talking about recently. He thinks comedy's coming back to like the old style of how it used to be. Because I used to listen to like when Bob Saget was on there, Rob Lowe was on there, and they kind of changed my idea of like what fame is. Like, everybody wants fame, but do you really want to be in the spotlight of a bunch of people, you know, that either can find a flaw about you and then hate you forever? And it's like, fame's just turned into this like watered down thing that everybody wants to... Everybody wants the rewards that come with it, but not like the whole, you know, all the other scrutinizing things that also go with it too. How you never get your piece, how everyone's got to be at your window taking pictures and all this stuff. Like Kanye West and Kim Kardashian broke up, biggest headlining news. I'm like, guys, Mars, like that's trending also. Why is everybody focused on, oh my God, Kanye and Kim broke up? I'm like, who gives a shit? Like, move on to the next thing. Sorry that, you know, you never got to see inside of these people's lives, but you just knew they were married and that's what you loved. But it hits this level of like Bob Saget talked about, he's so afraid to do jokes because the only thing he can make fun of is his dick, because it's his. And nobody's going to yell at him for making fun of his dick. But if he makes a joke about something or something like that, and I'm like, it's going to hit this point like it's starting to turn into now, where so many people are not giving a fuck anymore on the idea of like everyone's career is always on peril. And eventually, after being threatening them with like, you're going to lose your job, you're going to lose your career, people stop taking the threats and they just say go ahead. And then at that point, when they say go ahead, that's when it comes back. You know, people that are going to crack a joke knowing it's a joke, you know, whether it's effective against gender, race, whatever. If you're a person that actually has some sense to them, you're going to listen to it and be like, that's obviously a joke. Nobody's starting a fucking movement. But that's the issue, especially when you see it on like texting or Twitter or something like that. Anything can be misconstrued. But like, man, that's what I'm saying, is like that we've done so much when it comes to like trying to protect or trying to make decadence, that we've destroyed our own innocence on the aspect of like, now everybody's up to get roasted, everybody's up to get canceled, everybody's up to get grilled. And I'm like, man, you gotta know, like when somebody says something on a podcast or somebody says something that's like obviously in joking form, it's a fucking joke. Like, yeah. I don't want to crack jokes on my dick all the time. I got dick self-esteem I gotta keep up, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's funny because, you know, you're right that you can't just go around and say anything, because there's so much pressure from the other people. But really, we should be living in a world where that stuff doesn't matter. You know, I'm, you know, politically, I'm a libertarian. I like to kind of have government out of my business. I like to be kind of responsible for myself and let other people be responsible for themselves. Don't put me in a position where I have to take care of you. And if everyone's responsible for themselves, things work out pretty well. You know, there are people who care about other people, so they're going to do that. But, you know, in this world of having to worry about what you're going to say and what the ramifications are going to be, we've just kind of gone through this period of time recently where everyone's getting in trouble for, you know, blackface that they did, you know, 20 years ago. And, you know, something that could have been construed as racist back then is now definitely racist now, or sexist, or, you know, any of these things. And of course, back in the day, there wasn't a fear of that kind of backlash. It was really just kind of a, having a good time, being humorous. People realize it was a joke. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that we're going to revisit this sort of thing in a number of years down the road, but I wish that our society was a little bit more carefree and just kind of took care of themselves and not worry about all of the other stuff. And maybe people would start to realize that we're just kidding around. We're just trying to be funny. There's no intentional offense. You know, it's just us kind of trying to make light of life, which can often take you down a bad path, you know? Well, so I hope comedy goes back, but I don't know if it will.
It gets a little bit crazy because especially podcasts are so intimate. Like a lot of people don't realize, like somebody's listening to an episode you probably did a month ago and they're listening to it in their car for the first time. And then they feel like they want to tweet at you saying something to a point that you made in a podcast about a month ago. Yeah. You forgot about it, but that to them, that's so new to them that they just heard it. They think it's breaking news and they want to, you know, it's the issue of like, they're not in the room in this episode with us. So they don't have a say. So they feel like they have to message you. And it's like, did you, I posted an episode about like for my Valentine's Day episode, and I was talking about like, I don't want to be 30 and have a kid. I want to have my kids young so I can be young with them, because I grew up with older parents. So it was like, I don't want to be like Theo Vaughn, where his dad was 85 when he was like 6 and he had to hold a mirror up to his nose to make sure if he was still breathing. That's a legit thing he did. And I had someone that's having a kid like on the way right now message and be like, hey, you know, I'm 30 and I'm having a kid, so be careful. And I'm like, out of everything out of that podcast, that's what you pulled out of it. Not anything about like what's going on in the government, any of the serious, like actual mind bending thinking. Mm-hmm. Like there's a thing called the ultimate frequency that you can literally get to a level where there's a people hum at different frequencies and people's bodies move at different frequencies. Well, there's a pitch that you can touch that can literally bend you out throughout space and time, where it's like lucid dreaming but you're awake. And I'm like, out of all that deep talk we had, you pulled that out of that episode. And I'm like, in my opinion, you could be 70 and have a kid. I don't give a shit. I'm just saying, for myself, I wouldn't want to have a kid at like 40 or 50 or whatever, because I want to make sure I'm still young to be able to make sure I have the time and energy to be able to keep up with those things. And I was raised by my grandparents, so I also know how that's like to have that, like, hey, you want to go play baseball? And he's like, no. You want to go to the movies instead and see that John Wayne flick? And I was like, oh my God, another John Wayne flick. Sure, why not?
That's very good advice, by the way. You should be relatively young when you have kids, because guess what? As soon as you have kids, you dedicate all of your energy towards them. And if you are old and have no energy, oh man, it's going to make life really rough. And then, of course, when those kids are a bit more independent and want to constantly play, man, you got to be there for them, because those are the things that they remember. You know, I'm 42 and I've got an 18-year-old and a 10-year-old. And my 10-year-old she's very independent, but wants me to do stuff with her all the time. Fortunately, lately with COVID, it's been, you know, hey, can you play Minecraft? So we'll stay up late and play Minecraft, which is great. And she's going to remember those kind of memories for a long, long time. My 18-year-old, it's more like going out and doing physical stuff. He's kind of a javelin thrower right now and wanting to throw in college next year. And that requires a lot of energy from me. And I'm fortunate that I'm still young enough to be able to go and do that. But I've got several friends. In fact, one of the folks that I know, her dad, I think was, I want to say he was close to 60 when she was born and died a few years back, and they didn't have much of a relationship at all. And, you know, as you know, coming from a parental perspective, man, you want to have relationships with your kids. You want to be able to, you know, enjoy their company and they enjoy yours. And you're going to, you know, if you're lucky enough to have a deathbed and be able to speak to the loved ones at the end, you're going to want to say, you know what, I'm so glad I had all these memories. You don't want to be the person saying, you know, gosh, I wish I would have, you know. It's just those type of things I think about as I get older, and I go, you know what? Yeah, young people, you should probably, if you want a family, do it while you're younger and you're going to be able to do the things that you want to do, but also plan for it. There are too many unplanned parents out there, and they're in no position to be a parent, and that also can be really, really rough.
It's kind of like I've been making PETA the butt of the joke for a lot of things because of what they're doing right now. I don't know if you've heard, but they did the animal slang thing where they don't want you to say animal slurs. So instead of saying two birds with one scone or kill two birds with one stone, it's now kill two birds with one scone. So it's like, what? but I just saw a thing. Somebody, it was trending. It was the idea of free lunches in schools, and they were like, we should make it all vegan options. It's cheaper. It's a better method. And I was looking at it. I was looking at it and I was like, okay. I'm with you if it's a cheaper, more effective way, but I'm like, can we take down the first step first, which is just making lunch free in general for the kids? Because we don't even have meat lunches that are free. You think they're going to spend the extra, like, it's like if I told you, hey, Scott, we have an environmental plan that's going to cost about $5 million. And you're going to stop me and say, why? Don't we already have one in place? And I'm like, well, we do, but this is another thing we could be doing to help out. It's like, but if we already have one in place, then why are we going to spend an extra $5 million? No, dumb idea. So instead of making it all vegan meals, why don't you just work on making the things that are already in there free for the kids? Because I've been a kid that needed a lunch or something. So I'm pro kids should get free lunches, you know, and that does fall on a line with like planned parenting too. Some people have kids and they're not ready for it. And there are situations where kids don't have lunch money to afford it. So the school should be able to offer it. But the dude was like fighting the fight of, we need to make it vegan. We need to make it this. I'm like, we don't even have it for regular food. Like, just hang on a second. Let's work on the one step and then we'll move up to that one. And also let's make that debatable, because I'm telling you, I love vegetables, but I don't want to eat that every single meal. I want to have a little bit of sustenance and a chocolate milk thrown in there from that Cloverland dairy play.
Well, you know, I was a student, of course, for 12 years in high school. And then I've worked in schools for, I want to say it's close to 18 years now. And of course, my perspective is here locally, but I don't know that I've ever been to a school lunch place where the food was any good.
Like school pizza.
But you must have had better school pizza than we did.
Oh my God. We had this French bread pizza. That was like, there was the French bread one. There was like the mozzarella one that looked like mozzarella sticks, but they were pizza.
Oh yeah.
I don't know, but you can't really judge my diet, because my diet's like, I eat a can of tuna and animal crackers and I'm good to go. So I'm just saying.
Well, it's funny because there's so much waste in school lunches, because I mean, the school lunch options really aren't very tasty. It's not what the kids really want. And, you know, I grew up, for the most part, I would say through elementary, middle school years, where my parents provided me lunch every day. They gave me a sack lunch or some lunch option. And then as I got into high school, they'd either give me money so I could go to the Burger King nearby or pay for school lunch. So I always had, you know, my parents would provide something for me, but, you know, the free lunch idea, to me, being that libertarian, I go, why aren't the parents doing their job and providing them food? Now, if the parents don't have food because they're low income, you know, there's a different scenario, but man, there's like so much waste in schools. And I go, why aren't the parents just taking care of them? You know, as a parent, I always want to make sure that my kids are, you know, have protection. They've got safety, you know, they've got a roof over the head, they've got their meals. And I see so many people, they just don't care. The kid is like independent, where they go and do their own thing. And the parent is very, very little involvement in their daily life. And I see that in the grades that they earn. I see it in the food that they eat, the people that they hang out with. I go, God, where are the parents here? You know,
I think
it's
all a causation also too. You got to look at the perspective of like how many people now are suffering with like a mental illness or suffering with so much depression. Like I know, like mm-hmm. for my parents, for instance, my parents worked two jobs, were never home, like maybe a couple hours a day or something, but they tried to use that to sleep. But it was an idea of like, it's much more than like, I would say a financial situation that means as a parent, there's an emotional connection that needs to be there too. And not saying I was like emotionalist or whatever, but you know, I have my own things that kept me busy and stuff. But like, I look at the perspective, I've talked to so many social workers. I know so many friends that grew up where their parents just, you know, neglected them 100%, just wanted to go out and do their own thing, partied and never were home or whatever. We'd always go to their house because it was the cool house and stuff like that. But it's like, it really, like I said, there's a point to having kids later in life too, when you're actually financially stable and stuff. But at the same, you know, time, there's, it's all about the perspective of things too. And I just look at like a school, if they can, like, that should just, free lunch should just be, it shouldn't be that hard. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's a thing where it's like, you know, we pay tax money, we do all these types of things too, to be able to make sure that that can be an option of stuff too. But eventually you do have to look at like, hey, is the home even livable? Like, if a kid's going to get free lunch, you also have to check the home out too, have a social worker go over there and be like, is everything okay? Like, I just watched the My Strange Addiction show, and there was the girl that was eating mattresses. She was eating mattress pieces. And I think out of a total of, out of the 6 years she's been doing it, she's eaten a total of 8 mattresses. But she went into her mom's room where her mom was at work, was looking out the window for her mom coming home. And she's like, probably like in her like late 20s. And she's just ripping off pieces of corners of her mom's mattress and eating it and putting it in her pockets and stuff like that. And I'm looking at it like that, like the house is a wreck. You know, you start to notice things like there's green, like mold on the walls and stuff. And I'm looking at it like, this is like, it goes down to more of a core issue as well too. And you look at that and like, I watched a dubbed version of it. So like a dude was voicing over it. He was like, yeah, look at all these fucking mattresses that I'm eating. And it was like, she ate, I think a total of 8 mattresses. She's in the thing, goes, well, you're mostly mattress. We checked your 90% memory foam. And I just, it was making light of it, like joking of the situation, but like you start to notice things. Like I took therapy or psychology in school to become a therapist. And I was like noticing all how like the brain works, everybody thinks differently and stuff. And it just enhances your own vision of things too, because like sometimes people don't know how bad they have it. And so they realize like, oh, this isn't like, you know, going to school with like holes in your shirt and your like, I used to wear double socks because I had holes in my socks. It wasn't that my parents couldn't take care of me, is that I didn't want to bother them with trying to get new stuff because I knew how busy they were. Like, it's always these perspectives, this thing you start looking at. So like when I hear someone's story, when I hear someone's idea of something, I look at it, I'm like, yeah, I mean, but we just got to make sure you keep that other perspective in there, because like that keeps you leveled. Because I think the error becomes when someone says they're right and someone says they're wrong, because then you're putting yourself on a pedestal, acting like you know more than somebody else. And you'll be surprised about how many people I've come in contact with that PhDs, degrees, and they have this like 100% knowledge in that thing, and then nothing else in common sense or anything. And I'm like, what happened? Like, you have a PhD, you say scientist, people look at you like you have all the answers, like you're going to build a rocket ship. And they go, well, I'm a scientist in marine biology, not this. And I'm like, so you don't know how to do your fucking taxes? Like, it gets taken out of your check automatically.
It's funny. Yeah. Cause I've worked in education for many, many years, and you know, I work with very highly educated people. I've got principals and superintendents and, you know, executive directors, you know, they have their doctorate, they're highly, highly educated, but then you see them make decisions in the operation of something and you go, now that doesn't make any sense. I think someone with like street smarts would be picking up on the consequences of some of those things. And it's so true though. Some people get so focused on like what their expertise are that they let everything else kind of go away. You know, I'm not this highly intelligent person. I kind of look at myself as a jack of all trades, master of none, where I just love to learn about a lot of different stuff. And there's a certain barrier where if I were to get to that next level of understanding of maybe some concept, that it would require way more time than I have available to dedicate to it, right? It's just like the podcast. You learn probably a ton of stuff from all the people that you talk to, but your time is taken up with all of these things. For you to be an expert in one very specific thing, you probably have to eliminate all the other education that you're getting at the same time, you know? You know, to your point, you're talking about those kids that have these unique situations, you know, the mattress eater. I kind of like look at that kind of stuff and I go, we can't like put these people into some big statistical, you know, grouping. We really kind of have to look at a lot of those things on an individual basis and figure out what the best course of action would be. You know, you going to school you know, wanting to become a therapist, man, that's exactly what you do. You work with individuals and you figure out what's going on with them to help them as an individual get to that other thing. There are a lot of folks who just look at big groupings and statistics and then they go, well, all these people in that particular group, this is what we're going to do with them. Instead of looking at, there might be actually some details within that individual that you do the group thing and that person's not going to benefit from what you think they're going to benefit from. I think we've run into that all over society right now anyway.
I think, you know? There was a giant pushback not too long ago about teachers get paid way too much money. And I look at it like, no, I think teachers need less of a class load. Teachers, I would say, need less students on the aspect of, I believe one teacher should teach up to it only 10, at least 10. I mean, that's the most I would say would be 10, you know, because the aspect of you're trying to give an individual each attention to the point that they're going to be able to soak in information when everyone learns at different rates. I mean, I was a quick reader. I just never liked to read. I had really bad ADHD, but you know, an article just came out like about a week ago that was saying kids are being diagnosed more with ADHD since Zoom call or Zoom school recordings. And I'm like, no shit. They're at home. Last thing you want to do is listen to your teacher go on and on and on when you're sitting inside your room and you could be doing anything. No, that's not ADHD. That's just that they're not in the mindset. When I want to learn about something, when I want to read a book, when I go to this, I set my environment up for it. I'll go to the library. I'll go somewhere where I can actually have that atmosphere to get me to learn. Because if you ask me to read a book or try and do anything that is not whatever I want to do in my own room, I'm not going to do it if I'm in my room. I got a 55-inch TV staring at me. I got Netflix, Hulu, any options I want to watch. I got food downstairs. I'm not going to be reading my book, whatever. It's not going to happen. You have to set these things up. You have to count all these too. So I'm like, you just need to look at things instead of painting a broad brush like we've been doing for so long. Start narrowing things down to understanding, like once you understand one person's perspective, that whole percentage of what you were categorizing or generalizing gets narrowed down to a different, smaller degree than a smaller degree. Every problem we have is like a band-aid for the whole thing. And it's like, that's not all of them are suffering from the same thing. Like UK, for instance, their depression system is getting better, but their test is all from a person's perspective. The doctor could just look at you and be like, you depressed? You say, yeah, okay. And then they write you off a prescription where you might not even actually have depression. You don't have to take a test. You don't have to do these methods. And they're not too open to our way of dealing with it on the concept of it's like an American style, they say. So it's like this whole, wow, you're going to really labelize a country or something like that, and you're going to deny this actual thing that could help people find help. But you know, you got to let them figure out their own path and their own way and stuff. But you start looking at these things and now they're starting to notice that like a lot of depression, all these things linked to your nutrition. Like if I offered you 10 donuts, sounds good. Nice crispy creams, nice glazed chocolate. What are you want one with a little jelly inside of it? But then, you know, that feeling of like, I want those 10 donuts before you have them is amazing. It's like, I do want those. Then after you eat them, you feel like shit. And then you feel depressed because you don't feel good after eating 10 donuts. And they started noticing that a lot of like the gluten, all these things that inflame your inflammatory system, those are causing depression in people. It's why you eat a pasta dinner and you go to bed and you don't feel good when you wake up. It's because all this stuff is overloading your body. You start noticing like nicer people occur when they're not feeling like shit. And when they're not feeling like shit is when they don't eat like shit. So maybe nutrition is a good way to narrow it down. But I've also come across CrossFitters and vegans that don't shut the fuck up. So at the same time, it refutes my point. So it's like,
yeah, right. Yeah, but I agree with you. I mean, there's different ways, I think, to get out of, you know, like depression. But I think that a lot of folks are just not setting themselves up to avoid it. you know, you're talking about education, and my wife's a teacher. I've been in education for quite a long time. And I just see that our students are not really being set up for success to be able to handle life. We've got, I mean, I don't know in your area what a student is worth at a public school, but ours is like between $8,000 and $10,000. That one student for a year at your school is worth about that much money. That's a lot of money. You would imagine that you could provide a pretty high quality education and a pretty high quality result from these students. But I agree, we got too many kids in a class. Our teachers need to have far fewer kids, fewer requirements from their administrators and their school districts or their, you know, their state board of education folks. Our educators are also coming out of college and becoming teachers and having really no strategy to develop their own curriculum that would be engaging. You know, as a student, I think, you know, I'm much more now a like lifelong learner. I'm really curious about a lot of stuff. When I was a student, I didn't really care a whole lot. You know, maybe it was because I was, you know, chasing girls and, you know, throwing spears, but to me, I just didn't care that much. But there were some teachers who, I don't know if they tricked me into caring, but they sparked some interest in some areas. And I think that's what's missing from education. And then the other piece that you're talking about, you know, kids being able to handle stuff, the depression, you know, having the ability to, you know, avoid the 10 Krispy Kremes because they know that it's going to put them into a bad spot. But the other is having purpose. You know, I, as an older person now, I look for purpose, the podcast purpose for me, you know, going out and working with kids, throwing the javelin, it gives me purpose. My boss gives me a project. There's purpose. And for me, I have to, just like you said, set up my environment to then dedicate myself to that. I got to turn off Netflix. I got to, you know, sometimes it's turning off Spotify. It's not listening to the podcast that I really wanted to listen to that day because I need to put my focus on that one thing. And believe it or not, accomplishing that thing, man, it feels good. You're not going to be depressed when you're accomplishing things. Excuse me.
Well, it's even like putting in the work and stuff too. Like if, you know, you had an adventure, you had something you wanted to do, or you had to reshape your whole lawn and make it look real nice for a nice barbecue or something. Yeah, you could pay somebody to do it and it would still get done, but it feels so much better when you do it yourself too. It's just putting in that work is hard for a lot of people. And it's like, I always tell people, like, I know so many people that are like, how do I get this? How do I get that? You know, I've started so many podcasts. I've helped people grow their shows way past mine. And they're like, thanks for all the help, whatever. I'm just doing it because I like doing this. People make comparisons to things that they shouldn't be comparing to. People go, I'm the same age as Kevin Hart and I don't have what he has. I'm like, stop comparing yourselves to someone that might have gotten lucky or might have had a few things, doors opened up that he took. You know, like people compare their podcast after like a month or so. Like I commented on someone's photo that was like 1,500 followers or downloads or something. And I'm like, congratulations, like legit, like that's fucking awesome. And then they looked at me like, don't give me that. Like, don't be patronizing to me. Like, what are you trying to be an asshole? And I'm like, no, I'm serious. Like, even if one person listens to you, if two people listen to you, that's a fucking lot. But they go, well, you posted up something about having 40,000. I'm like, who gives a shit about the number? Don't compare me to you. Compare it to your own self. Where do you want to be? What do you want to do? I'll fucking achieve that shit. And I can say this motivationally and then I'll be depressed the next minute. But it's the aspect of like, we're all fighting so much more and people are fighting each other on the idea of they want to be the top. They want to fight other podcasters for the number one spot. They want your listeners. They want all this stuff. I'm like, just be you, man. Be the growth. Be authentic. That's what the world needs. It's why people love conversation podcasts. But people love Joe Rogan is because you're getting that person. I'm not going to be anybody else than who I am. I couldn't do it for this long and keep up some fake persona of Fartmeister 3 or some shit. I couldn't do it. I have to be me because I'm generally interested in the people I want to talk to, which is conversation is key, I think, in my mind. And you know, it works for me, so I roll with it. And you got to make a comparison on not something somebody did, but where do you want to be in life? And the world's getting harder, man. Like, it's not easy. Like, I listened to Rob Lowe talk about fame, for instance, and he was like, when he was on TV, there was 9 million people that listened to his show. And his show was last rated in the channels when he was on TV, when he was on a sitcom. Just hear that. 9 million people watching your show every week or whatever, every time it's tuned in, and you're the last rated show. That was considered a terrible show that they ended up canceling it. Then Big Bang, one of the most popular top rated shows, barely hit, didn't even get close, or no, it was, I think, 100,000 off of a million. And that was a top rated show. The world's evolving. There's 900 and something channels, and 300 of them are in Spanish, and then 200 of them are music. Like, stop comparing things to back in the day, what people were doing back then. Oh, Barack Obama was 40 when he became president. I still have time. Just focus on what do you feel like you should be doing. Do you feel like the step that you're taking right now is moving in the right direction, or do you feel like it's taking a step back? Do you need that extra thing? Do you need that new couch? Do you need that? Or are you going to funnel it somewhere else? Are you going to take the risk of advertising for your podcast or doing something or taking a risk, a gamble or whatever, and hoping that it pays off that way? Well, you got to make your own choices and stop basing them off of what a motivational speaker fucking tells you. That gets me the most. When a dude goes, just sitting in my garage with my McLaren, I'm like, go fuck yourself, man, with your McLarens. Give me that shit. Yeah. I bet you're miserable as hell.
Yeah. I think it's really important. Goal setting is one of those things that I think everyone needs to be looking at. Not just, you know, oh, where do I want to be in 10 years? What do you want to do today? What's your goal that you're going to set out for today? Because just having those little tiny incremental goals makes you feel good at the end of the day. You know, weekly goals, monthly goals, and it doesn't have to be like, you know, achieving, you know, this thing. It can just simply be that you're going to do something that's going to then further you as a person. You know, I heard this guy say a long time ago, he says, you know, a scale of 1 to 10, I look at myself as a 7, and I'm striving every day to become an 8. And once I hit that 8, where I feel pretty good about hitting that 8, I recalibrate, and now I'm a 7 again. And so he's always trying to get to that next level. And I think it's important as a person, you want to grow. You want to find things that interest you, that give you purpose, that helps you grow as a person. And if you're doing anything like podcasting, or you're a YouTube creator, or you're doing just, you know, a regular show, if you enjoy what you're doing, people are drawn to that. They always are drawn to that. And you're going to have a certain level of success. Even if, you know, you're doing some show and there's an executive that just doesn't like your show and cancels you, there are other options. If you really enjoy what you're doing, and you go through the process of continually trying to grow as a person and not getting caught up on all the analytics and all those numbers, but really enjoy what you're doing, you're going to get better at it, and more people are going to appreciate it and follow you. It's just the way it is. You know, some of these famous people on Twitter, they have a huge following because people care about that person and who they are and what they do. And they can tell that they enjoy life. You know, that's the kind of stuff that I go, if I can do those things, I know at least I'll be happy in the process. I'm not going to care too much about all this other, you know, all the other stuff around it.
I just feel bad if somebody invests 10 years or 15 years into trying to get their Twitter following to like 100,000, and then everyone moves on to a different app. And I'm like, oh my God, like, you got to restart all over again. You realize that all that time was wasted. Like, instead of focusing on how many the number is, focus on how many of those people are actually listening to your shit. Like, that's a big thing for me. Like, I try and listen to as many as possible. I try and keep in contact with a lot of people. But like, even then, now I still get messages where a dude hasn't talked to me in like a year. He goes, hey, how's it going? I literally just go, what do you want? Cause like, that's what it is. You have something in your head and they go, what? And I'm like, you want something? Just ask me it, man. Like, let's cut. I'm not a guy that likes all the bullshit. Let's cut through the bullshit, get to the point, and I can see if I can help you or not. And if it's about promoting your show, 100%, I'll post you up on my story if that's what it means to you, because I am on it just to get guests, and I'm off of it because I got a life to live, dude. Like, I want to do other shit. I got things I want. I got demons in my own head I'm trying to balance out. I don't need some dude going under the alias of like Trump sucks dick America, whatever. I don't know. Those are Twitter names you come across. Like, I had a dude try and tell me that people don't just say things without evidence behind it. And I said, bullshit. I can tell you right now, I can pull up on Twitter a result that if you drink Coke or Pepsi, you're a racist. And he goes, I don't believe you. And on air, I pulled it up, 20,000 results for Pepsi is racist. And I was like, it's people will say things because they have a platform to say things. That's why I like when I ask you if you use your real name and all these things. So I'm not hearing a stupid fake persona that's going to get views. I've had a dude come on here and fake cry before, and it's like, I don't care about views that much, man. It's nice if somebody listens. Sure, I love my listeners, but at the same time, I'm interested in trying to figure out, let's make this hour fun. Let's have a fucking chat. Let's maybe next thing you know, you're back on again, Scott. You know, it's this whole thing of like getting this vibe going. You know, I don't want to sit here and be like watching paint dry for a fucking hour. Like, oh my God.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you know your listeners are going, oh my God, just come on, move on. You know, you don't want to have a show like that. There's got to be stuff that's going to be, you know, sparking interest in bringing people back. That's, I mean, that's why I like your shows, because there's always so much variety. And you, you know, so far on every single episode that I've watched you or listened to, you're, you know, you carry on the conversation. You sounds like you're having a good time. So, you know, that's the stuff that's going to draw people in and keep them around.
Yeah, basically, if you get bored, then your audience is going to be bored. Like I had someone reach out to me and say, like, hey, I turned my show into too much of an interview podcast, and I want to make it like yours, conversation. And I'm like, surprisingly, like conversations, like it's not everyone has it, I would say. I mean, it's easy to have one, but like some people, it's just not like, you know, I'm a really weird comparison just because I can talk a lot. But talking to him, I was like, man, I was like, you have a really good platform, but if you're going to turn it into a conversation one, you have to just rip it up from the roots, man. Like you've based it talking to podcasters that you enjoy. So it's going to be question based, but if you want the, like, if I ever, when I went on a show, I made it all conversation because I don't like being interviewed. I'm the last person I need an interview. I just want to talk. I want to have fun. And, talking to him, and he revamped his show and everything too to make it more conversation based. I was like, because you just got to go in there and be like, hey man, we're just going to talk. We're going to see where it goes. I don't have a question lineup, because when you say interview, people think those words, you got questions lined up. And I'm like, when you say the word conversation, you say chit chat, you say whatever the hell you want to say. There's a Latin word for it. I think it's called corridium or something like that. That means conversation. That's the point of one. Nothing's lined up. You have fucking fun, dude, and you see where it goes. Much like when you hit record with your buddy, man, when you hit that recording, next thing you know, you're just going off on something. Next thing you know, you end up Mr. Rogers is evil, like I always say, because it's true.
It's funny, because for a little while I was feeling guilty when we just kind of go on, you know, we talk about, oh, what kind of stuff you want to talk about? Okay, well, let's do that. And then something sparks off and we're off down some, you know, other trail. And then I go back and listen to it while I'm doing the edits. And I hate editing, like clipping a whole bunch of stuff. So I try and keep one big old chunk, but I like to clip it and then post the clips, because some people have short attention spans. But I, you know, the way I look at it is I go, gosh, dang, that was a pretty fun episode. Even if it was just because I was enjoying the conversation with you. Hopefully, if I enjoy that conversation, yeah, other people will appreciate it too. It doesn't have to be on point, on topic the entire time. You know, you can go down some, you know, rabbit trails and still enjoy it. Have something that's, you know, fulfilling out of it.
I mean, you'll have your good moments, you'll have your bad moments. I had one of my worst moments was I found out Larry King died on air. So,
oh,
we were talking about Applebee's and how they just have random shit on the walls. And I was thinking of like, what's an autographed photo I've seen at an Applebee's on the wall? And I was going to say Regis, but I knew he was dead. So I was like, I can't say Regis. And I was like, Larry King. And then the guy goes, oh, rest in peace. And I'm like, what do you mean rest in peace? And he goes, Larry King died. And I'm like, what do you mean Larry King's not dead? And he goes, he died today. And I'm like, bullshit. I Googled it 2 hours ago. And I was like, oh my God. And he goes, oh my God, I literally just broke that to you. I am so sorry. And I'm like, those are the moments you get, you know, it could be good ones. It could be bad ones. It could just, they're overall fun experiences when you just let all those restrictions of like, if I wanted to watch a show that was so scripted up, I'd watch like, I don't know, something that's scripted on TV. I mean, so much of it now, Seinfeld, all these things that have like a running gag to the show. the world wants a little bit of realness to it, because I think for so long, a lot of people have not really being or been who they want to be. You know what I mean? It's kind of like before the pandemic, I said, people complain about wearing masks, but we've been wearing a mask our whole entire life. Nobody wants to be open and be themselves. And it's hard to do because you never know how someone's going to accept that. And I'm like, if we're just more accepting of what people has a view on, like instead of trying to change them, just look at that perspective and understand it and then move on. Doesn't mean it has to change your view.
Yeah. Have you ever had a show where you had to cut it short because things weren't going well?
Yeah, I had one. Usually when you see an episode, like I have one episode went 35 minutes, but that was because it was a 2-hour episode, and I had to cut it down to 35 because the dude had been hit by a car and suffered severe brain trauma. So it was like, I was like, do you have any side effects from it? And he was like, and then like 5 minutes later, no. And I'm like, nothing at all. And it wasn't trying to really poke fun, but it was like, he does TED Talks and stuff. He wanted like an interview. He was waiting for me to ask questions. And I'm like, I'll give it to you, man. I'll ask some stuff. But at the same time, it's like they go, some of them are different. Like each one I love, especially I remember every conversation, but like you pick your favorites, obviously, you know, which ones are easier. That's why I have returning guests and stuff. And some that people just don't really want to give you the time of day. You know, they're on their phone or something. I'm like, all right, man, well, thanks for chit chat.
Well, I haven't been in podcasting long enough to have that scenario, but you know, when you and I were kind of going back and forth about scheduling a time to do this, you were talking about having, you know, power outages and all kinds of weather issues going on. And we've had that here recently. Well, recording the podcast on Saturday, the power went out right in the middle of it. And it was just like, we're sitting in a dark, you know, studio, and it was like, now what do we do, you know? And I'm glad that that wasn't one of those like live streaming sort of scenarios, because, you know, we resumed later, and so I can do some editing, cut in, and not make it this hard cut at the end of the show. But, you know, technical problems come up all the time. I mean, my lights have been flashing throughout the day today, and I'm glad that things are working so far today.
Yeah, I got a freaking, it sounds like a hurricane going on right behind me as a window, and I can just hear the tree branches banging up against it. But like, I use that all flowing in a conversation. I've done podcasts where someone's doing dishes in their house, and I'm like, sounds like somebody's doing dishes. And then like, I'm talking to the guy, we're going back and forth, and a buddy of mine who drew a shirt for me, we were talking about dementia, and I was like, dementia has memory loss. And he goes, no, that's Alzheimer's. I'm like, dementia has memory loss. And I go, ask your wife right now who's doing dishes. I was like, ask her. And he goes, honey. And like, you get to hear her in the background, like, yeah, that's also, and it's like that whole thing. It's like incorporating it all, rolling with it. You know, I don't cut out anything. Like, I've sneezed one time out of the 700 times I've been on here, and I sneezed right in the middle of it. I was like, I'm keeping that on here. I was like, it's real. It's there. I don't want to spend hours editing and trying to cut through it all. I like it natural. You know, if somebody coughs, somebody sneezes, somebody does that, I like saying bless you. And then the podcast is like in this weird rabbit hole. And then we just go right back out of it.
Yeah. Well, it's good though. I mean, you do this so frequently. I can't imagine if you had to do like big edits. I don't know how you'd get the frequency that you have. You know, what's your schedule like when you do podcasts? You just schedule it and hit it and go, or do you double up anytime? I mean, what is it like to do your show?
I've done 15 today.
Jeez.
So I've been up since like 1 a.m. But like I said, there are some, like when I do editing ones, like if I have an episode, I had a dude who had social anxiety. So like he's a really nice guy. And actually eventually 400 episodes later, so like a full year later, I had someone that went to school with him on that I never even knew they knew each other. Like it was this weird, like, but that's cool. He had really bad social anxiety, and he was nervous about me posting the episode because it went really, really like 2 hours long, but it was only an hour of conversation really, because it was just so many pauses and stuff. And I told him, I was like, I don't start this thing to make people look bad, so I'm going to send it to you after I get done editing it. So I spent 6 hours editing the episode down, cutting out all the pauses and the breaks, and send it to him. He was so happy and wrote me a heartfelt message where I was like, that's why I do it. Like, I like the feedback I get from this, from the people that were on it. You know, I want this to be, like I say, the easiest hour of your life, hopefully. You know, like we've almost been talking for an hour and a half already. So it's like, hopefully it goes quick. You know, I would hate to feel like when you got to rip off a Band-Aid and it's that, oh my God, not ready. Slowly. It's like, just rip it off. Just rip it off.
Yeah. That's a good philosophy for a lot of other things too.
Well, Scott, man, where can people find your podcast, man? I really appreciate you giving me your time today.
Yeah, well, thanks, Rob. I appreciate it. You folks can find me at pretty much any podcast platform. We're hosted on Anchor, and they distribute us all over the place. And we're also on YouTube under Never Too Serious and nevertooserious.com. So folks can reach out. I'd love to hear from different listeners and take their topic ideas and then figure out how Dave and I are going to wander through something we have no idea about. So we enjoy this. So I appreciate you having me on your show.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to email in some topics. I got a brain like a jackrabbit. Let me tell you something, it goes all over.